Hi, gang, and welcome into one of the first offerings of the year in the Fred Bertelsen Room. This is Michael's Saturday Surprise for January 1st, 2011. And because he's the boss, Michael gets New Year's off. But his minions are here. But don't get too discouraged. You're not stuck listening to me. We've got the old master to lead us off this year on a good note. In a moment, we'll have a surprise offering from Rob Hansick of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, the man who's been doing this longer than he wants to remember. I'd like to rub that in. Anyway, Rob, take it away and get me out of this thing, and let's have some good listening.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to Yesterday Once More. Yesterday Once More is the program that turns back the hands of time to those thrilling days of old-time radio. Today on Yesterday Once More, we'll be featuring Theater 5, a program that was on in the very early 1960s, sort of one of the Johnny-come-latelys to the era of old-time radio. Since these programs are short because they have no commercials, we're going to feature not one, not two, but three, taking us to just over an hour. And with these Theater 5 programs, we're going to go right from one to the other. First, we're going to hear A Dream of a Scheme, and then A Nothing Place, and then a very private phone call. Enjoy.
Killed her. You strangled her because you couldn't stand her any longer. We have one witness who heard a scream, and two witnesses who saw you drag a trunk out and bury it. We'll find that trunk, and we'll find her in it.
Theater 5 presents A Dream of a Scheme.
Johnson, get the men busy with the jackhammer.
Okay, Sergeant. How much do you want them to dig up?
The whole cellar, if necessary.
Right. Okay, men, get set up over there in the corner.
Yeah, that looks like a good spot.
You, Mr. Warren. You and me will go upstairs and talk some more.
We certainly will, Sergeant. I have plenty to say to you.
Then lead the way. All right. Now we can talk, Mr. Warren.
Indeed we can, Sergeant Littler. And let me say, I protest for the third time. I protest in the strongest possible terms what you are doing.
It just so happens I have a search warrant.
You showed it to me. That does not justify your digging up my gardens, making trenches in my lawns, ruining shrubs that I have spent years cultivating. I insist that when you have finished this nonsense, you put everything back exactly as it was to the last blade of grass.
We'll do just that little thing as soon as we find your wife's body.
My what? Sergeant, you have an obsession. You will never find my wife's body, no matter how much you dig up my property.
Oh, now why don't we stop beating around the bush? Tell us where she is and we can spare your garden.
Stop digging up the bushes and that will spare my garden.
All right, never mind the clever comebacks. It's a known fact that you and your wife fought a lot, Mr. Warren, right?
Yes, I suppose so. Recently, her temper has become unendurable. I suppose our neighbors told you they heard her raised voice night after night shrieking at me.
They certainly did, especially the Travers next door.
The Travers? Those long-eared snoops. My dear Sergeant, they quarreled so much themselves they could hardly have heard me and my wife.
Well, they did.
All right. All right. We quarreled. Though I am a man of the most peaceful disposition, I like nothing better than a pipe and a game of chess. But Wilma would have irritated an angel.
And now she's gone, evaporated into thin air. That's very convenient, isn't it? Now you can have all the peace and the quiet you want.
I have already told you, Sergeant. After an especially bitter quarrel last night, she left me. Packed a bag, told me she had saved $3,000 from the household money, and was going far, far away. I would never hear from her again, she said, as I wasn't worth giving a second thought to.
What time was this?
About 8 p.m.
8 p.m., huh? Then how did Mr. Traber next door happen to hear her scream at midnight?
Why, that blasted gossip. Does he say he heard Wilma scream last midnight?
He swears it under oath.
Well, he's thinking of the night before last. Wilma had a little habit of screaming at me just as I was dozing off, just to see me jump.
Uh-huh. Well, he says he heard a scream. He went to the window. He saw you and your wife silhouetted against the living room curtains.
You were throttling her.
Oh. Fred Treber's imagination is running out of control. He may have seen something like that 2 nights ago. Now, I had to help Wilma get her necklace unclasped. It might have looked, to a pop-eyed gossip like Fred Treber, as if I was strangling her.
Oh, boy, you certainly have a lot of slick answers.
The truth is always the best
answer. All right, then answer this one. How does it happen that at 1 o'clock this morning, 1 hour after Mr. Treber saw you choke your wife, both the Trebers saw you drag a trunk out the back door, around to the side of the house, and then heard you digging?
They claim that.
That's why we have the warrants. That's why we're digging up your place. When a man's wife screams, when he's seen choking her, when he's then seen burying something, and she can't be found, brother, we know we have a murder on our hands.
Sergeant, I stand upon my rights as a citizen and a taxpayer. If you prefer to believe loose-tongued gossips like the Trebers rather than me, well, that's up to you.
Now, listen to me, Mr. Warren. The evidence proves to me that you killed your wife. We know that your car hasn't been moved since you had it greased and oiled Friday night. So we know you didn't take the body anywhere by car.
Very brilliant deduction, worthy of Sherlock Holmes. I suppose you checked the mileage on the car with the mileage written on the sticker at the gas station where they greased and oiled it Friday night.
We did just that little thing. 0.2 miles from the gas station to here. That's the only difference your meter shows.
Besides, since the Trebers spent so much time watching me, they would have seen me drive away.
They would have, but you didn't go. Instead, you spent an hour digging. They say that at 2 o'clock, you reappeared with a shovel and a pick, and you took them inside the house. We found them in the cellar, carefully cleaned.
I merely like to take good care of tools. Oh, this is all Fred Treber's imagination. He's heard her scream at me so often, he automatically thought he heard her last night. You know, frankly, Fred is a very muddle-headed man. He can't even play a decent game of chess.
He tells a straight story, and I believe him.
Oh, I imagine if his wife Rhoda would do him a good turn and leave him as Wilma left me, he might straighten up. Basically, he's not a bad chap. But next to my Wilma, his wife is the prize harpy in town.
Don't try to change the subject. You have a $10,000 life insurance policy on your wife,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, and I do not intend to try to cash it. After all, she just walked away and left me.
Oh, you're smart. You're really smart. But we're going to get you.
Now, obviously, this killing was done in the heat of passion. You didn't have any plans ready for getting rid of your wife. So her body has to be on the premises somewhere.
Well, there's a nice vacant lot about 3 blocks away. Suppose I carried her over there and interred her quietly with no ceremony.
No. I can't see you carrying a dead woman 3 blocks. This town has too many people around, even at night.
You couldn't risk it even if you had the nerve. You buried her right here on your own grounds where you could pick the spot and keep your eye on it.
Well, it's certainly nice to know what I did. It saves straining my memory.
Amateurs like you, when they kill their wives, they don't...
Sergeant, don't wives ever kill husbands? Or have you a prejudice against husbands?
When one kills the other, he or she generally buries the dead partner right on the premises. That's a matter of statistics.
And consequently, my grounds now look as if someone has been hunting for buried treasure. Some of the trenches outside are 4 feet deep.
Now, we'll go to 6 feet if we have to. If you think you can get away with a thing like this...
Excuse me, Sergeant.
What is it, Johnson?
Well, we didn't seem to be getting any place in the cellar, and I had an idea.
All right, an idea. Come on, spill
Well,
it.
You know, we examined the car, but we didn't take it out of the garage. And that garage has a dirt floor.
A dirt floor?
Well, what are you waiting for? Come on! We'll push that car out and get that garage floor dug up. Sergeant! Wait! I protest! Sergeant!
He's gone. A hyperthyroid type, if I ever saw one. He should be careful. Someday he'll have a heart attack.
Yes, who is it?
It's me, Fred Treber.
Just a moment.
Hello, Charlie. I don't suppose you feel much like talking to me, do you?
I certainly don't. After all, it's you who started all this, you and your wild stories.
Oh, no, please don't be angry, Charlie. It was really Rhoda who called the police this morning when you said your wife was... Well, gone. Personally, I'm sure there's a natural explanation for everything.
You're sure, you're sure. Meanwhile, will you just look at my grounds? Will you look at my lovely flower beds? I have you to thank for this destruction of years of patient effort.
Honestly, it was Rhoda. You know what she's like. I told her Wilma is always screaming, and if you felt like burying a trunk in the middle of the night, that was strictly your business, and we shouldn't be nosy.
You're the one who said he heard Wilma scream. You're the one who said he saw me choking her. What you need, Fred, is a good psychiatrist.
Oh, now, that's unfair, Charlie. That's really unfair. I came over here hoping we could make up and still be friends.
You, Warren, you in the door there. Can't we step around here, my friend?
You're speaking to me, Sergeant.
Nobody else. So you thought you could fool us, eh?
Well, we found it.
Found what, may I ask?
First, we found loose soil underneath your car in the garage. Oil-stained dirt. That was very clever, staining the ground with oil and parking your car directly above it.
What'd you do that for, Charlie?
Be quiet, Fred. Sergeant, would you please explain what you're leading up to?
I'm telling you that we found the trunk you buried. Now, you watch us dig it out and open it. And try to think of some fancy explanation for what we're going to find inside that trunk.
Loosen that end a little more. That's it. All right, Johnson. You and Briggs lift her out by the handles.
Okay, Sarge. We're getting it. Come on, Briggs.
Charlie, why on earth did you drag that trunk out and bury it here in your garage last night?
For reasons I considered good and proper. And a good neighbor would have kept his mouth shut.
Oh, I wish you'd believe me. It was all Rhoda's fault. I don't care what you bury.
There you are, Sarge. There's the trunk.
Well, Mr. Warren, what have you got to say now?
Simply that I consider this whole affair an outrage. If I want to bury a worn-out old trunk, that is my privilege.
But it isn't your privilege to put your wife into it first. Okay, Johnson, get it open.
I protest. That is my private property you're going to damage.
Johnson, put the point of the pick under the lid.
Okay, Sarge, here she goes. She's open, Sarge.
Well, go ahead. Lift the lid.
Oh, really, Charlie? I know your wife was making your life miserable, but wasn't this a little drastic?
Oh, shut up. There. See?
There's nothing in it, Sarge.
You imbecile, lift out the top tray. She's naturally underneath it.
Okay, okay. Uh-oh. Look at this.
Oh, my goodness, Charlie. So that's what you did. Now I understand.
Dolls. A dozen dolls and a great big teddy bear. Oh, no. She's got to be underneath them. Dump them out. Make sure.
You couldn't bear to keep them around. Isn't that it, Charlie?
Please, Fred, shut up.
Nothing. Nothing, Sarge. Absolutely nothing. Just 12 fancy dolls and a big teddy bear. That's what he buried in this trunk.
All right, Mr. Warren. Now, just why did you bury a trunk full of dolls and a teddy bear in your garage at 1 a.m, huh?
Well, I should think it would be obvious.
You see, after she walked out on him, he couldn't bear having them around anymore. We're forbidden to incinerate things in this city, so he buried them to get them out of sight. Isn't that it, Charlie?
Fred, I can speak for myself. However, Sergeant, it happens to be true. See, Wilma never had children. Instead, she lavished sickening affection on these dolls. She talked to them. She told them what a worm I was, and she pretended they sympathized with her. Well, after she left me, I had to get rid of them to be rid of her. That's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm. You're lying. You gotta be. And yet I can't prove it. I just can't prove it.
Hey, Sergeant, I got an idea.
What is it, Johnson?
Well, now, look, suppose he buried the trunk for a decoy.
A decoy?
Yeah. Suppose there's something else deep down under it. Now, we were supposed to find the trunk, and
then we were supposed to stop digging. Johnson, you got it. Dig some more. 6 feet, 8 feet if you have to.
Okay, Sergeant.
And you, Briggs, you and the other men, dig up those other flower beds. She could be under them.
Sergeant, I forbid it.
And dig deep.
Charlie, as long as your dahlias are being dug up anyway, would you care to trade a few of your Gordon Pinks for some of my Amber Goliaths?
Fred Treber, never speak to me again. We have played our last game of chess together.
Please don't say that. I love our chess game.
They are finished. Our friendship is finished. Now I am going in the house. I refuse to watch the sergeant and his men commit vandalism on my helpless flowers. Come in. No, it's you, Sergeant. Well, what have you found now?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. A whole day of digging, we just have a trunk full of dolls.
Are you prepared to believe now that Wilma just walked out on me taking $3,000 she saved from the household money?
I don't know what to believe. I'm just sure you didn't take her anyplace in the car and you didn't carry her anyplace, so she's got to be here, right here still.
But if you can't find her, you must be incompetent. Isn't that what you're really saying?
No, blast it, I know my business. If I can't find her, well, maybe your story is true. This isn't easy, but I apologize, Mr. Warren.
I will accept your apology on one condition, that you undo all the damage, fill in all the holes, and restore my garage, lawn, and gardens to their former condition, or as nearly as possible.
We'll do that, we'll do that. It's quitting time today, but tomorrow a crew from the city building and grounds department will be over to fill up all the holes.
And take away that trunk full of abominable dolls and burn them.
We'll do that. You know, in a way, I hardly blame you.
For what, may I ask?
For whatever you did. If you did it. Any woman who would talk to a bunch of dolls and tell them her husband was a no-good crumb has got something coming to her. Well, good night, Mr. Warren, and no hard feelings, sir. I only wish I knew what you really did with her.
Just a minute. Oh, it's you again, Fred.
Yes, I waited till Rhoda was sound asleep.
You're sure she won't wake up?
She took one of her sleeping pills, and it's a nice dark night. Sort of foggy.
Well, in that case, we might as well get it over with. Hmm. It is dark out, isn't it? I can hardly see you.
That's what we want, isn't it? Follow me. I can find my way around in the dark.
I'm right behind you. You know, Fred, I think you rather overdid things this morning.
Oh, I was just trying to seem like a simple-minded neighbor and keep the cops suspicious so they'd go on digging the way you wanted them to. Well, here we are. I'll unlock the door. Come on inside. Quick. Now we can risk using my penlight. This tool shed of mine hasn't any windows.
I know. That's why I suggested it.
Here we are. A little light. Oh, there she is, Charlie. Just as natural as life.
Hello, Wilma. Having a good rest in that wheelbarrow?
Do you have to talk to her? It's sort of macabre.
Well, that's the only time I've ever been able to speak to her when she couldn't yell back at me. You see, Fred, I told you it would work. If I hid her in your tool shed, they would search my property. But you were the one who informed on me, so naturally they'd never think of searching your property.
It worked out just the way you said it would. It's a dream of a scheme, Charlie.
Oh, I had to do it. I couldn't stand life with Wilma any longer. Now, this is what we're going to do. The police left a hole almost 7 feet deep in my garage. Now, we'll put her there. Then we'll put in a lot of dirt. Tomorrow, the building and grounds crew will just find a hole and finish filling it for me. She'll be gone forever. And one place the police will never, never search again is the place they have already dug up.
Oh, you're genius. But do we really have to wait a whole year before I can try it, too?
Oh, we certainly do, Fred. We certainly do. That was my idea, and you agreed to wait a full year, at least.
Oh.
You see, then the sergeant can come over and dig up your place while your wife is in my basement. He'll dig and dig and dig.
Charlie. Charles. Wake up, Charles. Wake up.
Well, what is it?
You were having a nightmare. You were calling out, dig, 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 and laughing insanely.
Oh, yeah. So I was. I was dreaming about my garden.
Your garden. Well, I've made up my mind. All those flowers are coming up, and I'm going to plant some real nice evergreen shrubbery like the Treebers have.
Wilma, you wouldn't.
I certainly would. I'm sick of the time and money you spend on those silly flowers. And you better get up if you don't want to be late for work again.
A dream. It was all just a dream, but it seemed so real. As if it had actually happened. As if it had actually happened. Yes. This is Charlie.
Charlie? This time of the morning? What is it?
Fred, I have to talk to you. Privately. Meet me for lunch. I've just had an idea. A scheme. You could even call it a dream of a scheme.
Has presented A Dream of a Scheme, written by Robert Arthur and directed by Ted Bell. In the cast, Elliot Reed, Arlene Walker, Ralph Bell, John McGovern, and Jack Hurdle. Audio engineer Neil Pulp. Sound technician Ed Blaney. Script editor Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastovsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Otter. Executive producer for Theater 5, Ted Bell. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York.
Desperation. Listen now to the story of a man whose gimmick leads him to a nothing place on Theater 5.
There we are. safety okay, folks?
I guess. Say, duplicate.
Here. Oh, darn. The cat's in my purse.
Oh, wait a second. I got some change somewhere.
No, that's all right. I'm working long shift. Well, if you want something, just ring this bell, folks. It may take me a little while. We're short-handed.
Sure, Sonny. Sure.
Gee, what a flea bag.
But just right for us. A nothing place.
You know it.
Nobody sees nothing. Nobody cares about nothing.
And it's done. Oh, we're in clover.
Hey, don't race your engine, baby. Now, we gotta watch ourselves, see? Pretty soon we start staring at these crummy four walls and wish we were somewhere else. Spending the dough.
Oh, let's look at it, Harry. The money.
Later, later. Right now, this ever-loving satchel goes under the bed.
We got time.
We got lots of it.
Oh, tell me, Harry. Tell me again.
We sweat it out. We just sit in this nothing place while the cops shake down the stoolies and look for the car and cross-examine a lot of witnesses who can't tell them a thing. Then, when the first heat's off, we grab a bus to Cleveland. Maybe Chi. From there, we take a plane to the coast and we sit a little while more. Then we buy a car.
Oh, talk to me. This is the part I like.
We drive down the coast. Coronado, Ensenada, and Mexico City. High, cool, and classy.
Dress shop. Jewels.
Strictly the Ritz all the way.
You and me in the lap of luxury. I ought to be a songwriter.
They like you, baby. That's the way Harry likes you.
The smartest thing I ever did, staking you to a meal.
And the rest. Slinging ash.
Taking all that lip from wise guys.
So if Harry could buy the stuff he needed, a little here, a little there, and make a lovely thermite bomb, just like the government taught him to in the big bad war.
Then wham! Like in the movies. A hash-slinger.
Hello, Dom. Yeah.
Oh, they got their hands, our hands, on a bundle of cash.
And then, now, it's a la carte all the way.
Yeah. Hey, I feel naked. No lipstick. Open my purse for me.
Avec plaisir, madame. That's funny. Oh, what's frozen?
Huh?
Let's see, I got me a knife somewhere.
In the bag, maybe?
Maybe. I should be able to...
What's this?
Look, I'm the Joker. Figures how to knock over an armored car, and I can't even open a five-and-dime purse.
Don't fatty yourself.
Listen, let's make like we're living here, huh? I got some goodies for us.
Surprise?
Yep. Ring for the bell off of the elevator boy or whatever he is. We'll get us some ice, because we got booze and crossword puzzles and a deck of cards and all sorts of things. Don't that beat all.
Problem?
A minor league. Top must have been loose. The bottle's empty.
Well, listen, that booze didn't get into my lingerie, did it?
No, but a couple of my shirts are sure wet. Well, let's hang them up. No. Why bother? So I'll buy some new ones, right? Hey, you ring for the guy?
Yeah. Find your knife?
Hmm?
My purse, remember?
Oh, yeah. It ought to be here somewhere.
So I do without makeup. We're not going out social. Oh, baby, I got the jumps, the fever. Let's take a look at it.
The payroll, though?
What else?
Gotta admit, my fingers is itching, too. I want to touch it. I want to feel it.
So?
You twisted my arm. It's heavy, all right. Now.
What you looking for?
A knife, silly. I'm gonna open this thing without... Hey, wait a minute. Ain't that a frost? A valise full of payroll dough, and they don't even lock it.
Well, open it.
Kind of scared, too. Well, there.
Oh, baby.
Sucks you, don't it? Right in the old gut.
All that dough. Oh, it's really there.
Yeah, and them beautiful pictures, those ever-loving presidents.
How much?
I'm counting as fast as I can.
What's your figure?
Bonanza. Bingo. Jackpot. Look, we figure 200,000, maybe. The least, huh? Well, it's more. Maybe they had a lot of overtime this week. I don't know.
How much?
Oh, it's got to be closer to 300.
$300,000. One lousy hour, and we're rich.
1 hour. And 6 months planning.
Sorry, folks.
What the?
I came across
the
bag.
I have.
But I got to handle the elevator. It was shorthanded, like I say, with the manager not here and all. Everything's kind of piling up on
you. Yeah, I dig you, Sonny. Now, look. Here's a five spot, see?
Thanks.
The missus don't feel so good, so maybe we don't go out tonight. You get us some ice, see? And
the booze, Harry.
Oh, yeah. Look, here's a 10. Now, dig up a bottle of bourbon, okay?
Well...
Come on, make with the feet. You take care of us, we take care of you.
Yeah. But it's just that the ice machine's broken and we haven't got any liquor license.
Sonny, how? I don't care. You don't get flipped a fiver around here often.
No, sir. We don't. This is a real nothing place.
Well, like... What did you say?
I said, I'll do what I can.
Yeah. Yeah, you do that.
What's with you? Suddenly you're pale-like.
How did he get in?
Huh?
The door. I locked it from the inside. The door's locked. Then this punk, this elevator boy walks right in. Now, what is he? A magician?
Oh, look, you're jumping. You got it right. Not everybody knocks over a $300,000 payroll every day. Look, maybe you don't lock the door.
Listen.
Maybe the kid's got a pass key.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'm getting steamed over nothing.
Just the same. This time, I make sure. Okay.
Now, we make merry till the refreshments arrive. Out for some gin.
You're on. What a game. Hey, we can afford a buck a point.
Like it was nothing.
I got the cards. Harry.
Hmm?
It's awful hot in here.
Yeah, it is for a fact.
I'll open the window.
Good. Hey, better watch out. I might stack your hand.
Yeah, well, with our kind of dough, who needs to cheat? Hey, what's with this window? I can't make it fit.
Harry, there's only 48 cards.
You're kidding.
Oh, it's not a full deck. Count them yourself.
Oh, how did that happen?
Mister, I just...
Hey, you. Come here.
Yes, sir.
Now, listen, punk. How come you just walk right in? Wait a minute. I didn't see you come in through the door. Is there another way into this room?
No, sir. There's no other way in.
You say that funny, like. What do you mean?
The window, Harry.
The window? Oh, yeah, the window. Way out.
Kid, can you open it? We need air.
Way out.
Yeah, sure. Sure, lady. Anything you say. Right away.
Now, hold of yourself.
Listen, there's something oddball about this. Hey, what's that? Them sirens. Cops?
No, sir.
Oh, don't kid me. Sounds like every cruiser in town's headed this way.
The police seldom come here, sir. But we do have a lot of fires.
No. Allie, I like to play it cool, but why do this? What? Then listen to that.
Close the window, kid.
Yes, sir.
Look, You got a pass key?
Yes, sir. I do. I got the manager's key.
Oh, well, that explains it. Now, look, what about this manager? The lady and me, we know this ain't no Waldorf, but we want some service, see?
As soon as the manager gets...
You get him right up here.
Well, he usually doesn't
do
that.
Well, this time he will. Now, how about the booze?
Well, as soon as I get a minute...
You make a minute. There's five, get me? The booze, ice, couple of chicken sandwiches on rye, plenty of mayonnaise, right?
Yes, sir. As soon as I can, sir.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. And maybe there's another thing for you. Get me?
Yes, sir. Yes, indeed. We got you.
For a moment there, I almost slipped.
Look, we're strung up pretty tight. Those two payroll guards, Dan...
Stop thinking of that.
So, what do we do now? Sit and sweat?
No.
Now I got some paperbacks for you, kid. I'll work some crossword puzzles. Pretty soon, everything will settle down.
I hope so.
Here's your books.
What's this one?
Oh, it's a whodunit. According to the cover, it's a real bloody... maybe you better read this one. Sex for sale.
And when I get to the part about the well-stacked broad with plenty of dough, that's me!
That sure is. Baby, what's a five-letter word for fear?
Dread?
D-R-E-A-D. Hey, you ought to work crosswords sometime. Oh, for Pete's sake, I broke the point. You got a pencil?
No.
Well, how am I going to work
Harry,
a puzzle without a pencil?
Harry.
All right, what's bugging you?
The books. I can't read them. My glasses are in my purse.
I can't open your purse. My pencil's busted. We got no booze. My knife's gone. The cards aren't a full deck. That elevator boy pops out of nowhere. Look, hey, are we going nuts or something?
And it's getting hotter.
Yeah, I'm sweltering. Look, grab the money. We're getting out of here.
Hey, Faye.
What?
The door. I can't open it. What's going on?
Harry, please. It's getting so hot.
Chair. I'll bust the window.
No, somebody will notice. The law will show up.
Well, it's better than suffocating. Besides, didn't you hear the kid? The police seldom come here. There. At least we got some air.
Those lousy, stinking sirens.
My throat. I'm parched. I gotta get something to drink.
The bathroom.
Yeah, sure. Tap water, even. Anything. Oh, it looks good, don't it?
Oh, it's warm.
I don't care. Here's the glass.
Oh, you smashed it.
Oh, what? Here, I'll cut my hands under the water. You can drink that way. We've got to drink something.
Ew. Oh, it's terrible. Oh, no. Oh, my mascara. I got it in my eyes.
Use a towel. I got a drink.
Oh, Harry. There ain't no towels.
Jeez, that water. It's all rusty. And it... Hey. You look lousy. Your mascara's running all over your face. You got no lipstick, no nothing.
It's a nothing place.
You got through the door. Thank heaven.
I wish you wouldn't use that word here.
You can get us out of here.
That's what I came for. The manager, Mr. Dredd, is ready to see you, sir.
Mr. Dredd?
Hey! It's locked again.
Yes.
Open it, will you?
It's locked forever, sir. You go this way.
Harry! The wall! It's opening!
Yes, ma'am. It's the escalator. Right this way.
Yeah, but we don't want to go up in no escalator.
All our escalators run down, sir. Just step right through here. Both of you.
Well, now, listen, this is crazy. Hey, where are you?
I'm
you. Look, hold this thing. I want to get back.
Kathleen Walker and Donald Buca. Audio engineer Neil Pollock. Sound technician Ed Blaney. Script editor Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Arthur.
Closer and listen carefully. You don't suppose I'm dying because I want to, do you? My family, the men all die suddenly. Always have, always will. Doctors can't explain it. Lots of things doctors can't explain. Now, when it comes to dying, it's like everything else. If you want a thing done right, do it yourself, I always say. You can't trust anyone with the details, especially these days with the kind of help you get. Howard Williams speaking. Use your own judgment for once and don't call me back. I'm busy dying. Yes, I said dying. Goodbye. Now you listen and listen carefully.
Theater 5 presents A Very Private Phone Call.
Nurse Evans. Dr. Barlow has been in my husband's room more than an hour. Is something wrong?
Now, Mrs. Williams, you mustn't worry.
Well, I am worried. It isn't like Howard to be sick.
Well, we all have to be sick sometimes. And Dr. Barlow is very capable.
But it's all been so sudden. The way Howard fainted last night. And today he couldn't get out of bed. And now Dr. Barlow won't even let me in the room. Oh, Nurse Evans, I just know something terrible is wrong with Howard.
Now, really, worrying won't help, Mrs. Williams. Do let me fix you some coffee.
No. And it's no use talking in that soothing way. Howard is going to die. And I'll be left all alone.
No, please, you mustn't.
And I can't stand being alone. When my father died, I was 27, and I'd kept house for him since I was 16. And then all of a sudden, he was gone. And I was alone.
We all have to be alone sometimes.
But I hate it. I'm not practical. I can't even balance my own checkbook. All I know is how to keep a nice house and entertain. And that's been enough for Howard. He was my father's business partner, you know. After father died, he looked after things for me. And then, well, we just got married. Of course, he's much older, but I like him. I like my husband very much, Nurse Evans. Even if he won't take me on any trips as he promised he would.
Won't take you on any trips? I'm not sure I understand.
Around the world. Howard is in shipping, and he owns steamships and plantations and mines in Africa and the South Seas and just everywhere. Places I've longed to go see ever since I read about them when I was a girl.
Well, I should think he'd be glad to take you along on his trips, Mrs. Williams.
But that's just it. He never took any trips. He stayed right here and did all his business by telephone. Do you know how many telephones we have? 13. Before we were married, he promised we'd go around the world on our honeymoon. But then some business came up and we never went. That's the only thing I have against him in 10 years of marriage. I admire and respect him and I don't want him to die. I don't want to be left alone again.
No, please, you mustn't let yourself get up. Oh, here's Dr. Barlow.
Doctor, how's Howard?
Mrs. Williams, your husband wants to speak to you. You must be very brave.
You mean he's going to...
I'm sorry to say it's only a matter of time, perhaps of minutes.
No.
He wants some last words with you. Now be strong and don't upset him.
I'll try.
Good. Go in now. He's waiting for you.
All right.
There you are. Took you long enough. I suppose that quack Barlow told you.
Oh, Howard, please don't die. Don't go away. Don't leave me all alone.
Barlow, stop that confounded blubbering.
Yes, Howard.
I hate crying women, so control yourself.
Yes, Howard.
Yeah, that's better. Now listen to me. You see those three phones on my bedside table?
Yes. The black one for your European calls. The white one for your calls to South America. And the red one. The one that never rings.
Oh, you've noticed that the red line never rings. That's because it's intended to ring only once.
Only once?
I said only once. Don't make me repeat myself.
Sorry.
When that red line rings, you must be here to answer it. When the time comes, you must not fail me. Promise, Laura?
I do, Howard, I do. I won't fail you.
Well, I'll give you credit for that. You're reliable.
I've tried to be a good wife. Have you been satisfied with me?
Yes, of course. You run the house very nicely.
Well, then don't die. Don't go away and leave me all alone.
Stop sniffling. I told you I detest crying women.
I'll try.
You don't suppose I'm dying because I want to, do you? In my family, the men all die suddenly. Always have, always will. Doctors can't explain it. Lots of things doctors can't explain. Now listen, Laura. And listen carefully.
It's a phone.
And which phone is it?
White one.
South America. Well, see who it is.
I'm not at a time like
this. It's business. Answer it.
Hello? What? Well, just a moment, please. It's Rio de Janeiro. Shall they send your freighter Woodbine on to Tahiti and then Bali Bali or direct to Australia?
Well, let me have it.
Here.
Hello. Howard Williams speaking. Use your own judgment and don't call me back. I'm busy dying. Yes, I said dying. That ought to give them something to think about.
Howard?
Well?
Are they really so romantic?
Is who so romantic?
You know, Rio de Janeiro, Tahiti, Bali Bali.
They're all Americanized with neon lights and soda pop machines.
Well, just the same, I'd like to see them. I'd like so much to see them. Now we'll never go. You're dying. We'll never go anywhere. Howard? Howard! Doctor! Doctor!
What is it, Mrs. Williams? Oh, nurse, my kid.
Yes, sir.
Hurry!
No perceptible pulse. Respiration nil. Now to check the heart.
Doctor! Is he...
For one moment. No heartbeat. Yes, I'm afraid so, Mrs. Williams. Your husband is dead.
No. No.
Well, you must be strong. Here is a letter he instructed me to give you after his death.
Letter?
It explains about the red telephone. You know how your husband opposed what he considered fuss and feathers. He expressly demanded no ceremonies of any sort and left positive orders he was not to be embalmed. That means he must be buried within 24 hours. That's the law in this state.
Oh, no, that's so soon.
Tomorrow afternoon, he will be laid to rest in the family vault in Rolling Hills Cemetery. Until the mortician comes, I will remain in this room with the body. That is also your husband's order.
I see.
Also, his wishes are that after the funeral, you will remain either in this room or the adjoining sitting room for 3 full days, not even leaving for meals.
I don't understand.
Well, it's all explained in his letter. Now, Nurse Evans, please take care of Mrs. Williams.
Of course, Doctor. Come with me, Mrs. Williams. You must rest now.
He's gone. Howard's gone. Now I'm all alone.
Howard,
Well, here we are back again, Mrs. Williams. You were very brave. I couldn't cry because it didn't seem real. Those men put Howard in a box, put the box on a stone shelf in the mausoleum, and they put a slab in front of the box. We all went away and left him there.
Now, it was a very nice funeral, dignified and simple. You understand that I'll be here to look after you for the next 3 days. I'll be in the room down the hall any time you need me.
Yes, thank you.
And no one will bother you. The telephones won't ring because the secretary is taking all calls downstairs.
In the red phone?
The red phone?
He said I must be here to answer it, that I mustn't fail him.
Well, I don't know anything about a red telephone, I'm afraid.
A letter. The doctor gave me a letter from Howard about it. If I've lost it, Howard will be furious. He'll shout and swear and...
He's dead, isn't he?
Yes, Mrs. Williams. Is this the letter here on the bedside table? Oh, yes, I must have put it there yesterday.
Well, I'll leave you to read it.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Reedy.
It's all right, nurse. I just wanted to speak to Mrs. Williams.
Yes, of course. It's Mr. Reedy, your husband's lawyer, Mrs. Williams. Now, be sure to ring if you need me.
My dear, you have been very brave.
It just doesn't seem real.
I understand. And I've been thinking, why don't you plan a sea voyage, a trip around the world, new sights, new faces to help you forget?
No, I don't want to do that. You hear? I won't do it.
But I always understood.
You don't understand. Those cruises are full of women traveling all alone trying to find a man and never, never finding one. Well, I won't be one of those awful women traveling every place all alone.
But, my dear...
Now, go away and leave me alone. Oh,
perhaps I haven't explained my idea correctly. I'm sure our Mr. Roberts can do it better. I'll send up Mr.
No, Roberts. I just want to be left alone. Howard, why did you have to die? Why? The letter. I haven't read the letter. You'll be angry at me. I'll read it right away, Howard. Right away. Dear Laura, you must stay in this room or the adjoining sitting room for 3 full days. That's because if the red telephone rings, you must be there to answer it. Laura, if that red line rings, it will be me calling you. You calling me? But Howard, I don't understand. Oh, yes, of course, the letter. For generations, Laura, the men in
my family have died suddenly. Those quacks, the doctors can't explain it. It's a family inheritance, that's all. But are you paying attention, Laura? Sometimes we return to life after being, to all appearances, dead.
My goodness.
I say sometimes return to life. 5 of my ancestors have done so. 5 we know about. 1 was saved. The others were found with their fingernails ripped off, trying to claw their way out of their coffins. Their bodies were twisted and contorted.
Oh, how awful.
This must not happen to me. You must not let it happen. That red telephone, it connects to the family mausoleum. As I am laid to rest, the mortician will plug in a wire connecting the red phone to a microphone in the lining of my coffin. If I so much as whisper, the red telephone will ring like a fire alarm, and you will answer it. Do you understand, Laura?
Yes. Yes, I do understand.
So, if you hear the phone ring, I will be calling. Answer at once. Then contact Dr. Barlow and the mortician. All 3 of you will rush to the family vault to rescue me. So, Laura, stay close to the red phone. It may ring. I may return to you. For the last time, are you sure you understand?
Yes, I do, I do. Oh, please come back, Howard, please. Maybe you're there now, trying to speak. Howard, can you hear me? Howard, are you there? Howard, please speak to me.
just answer.
It's too soon. I'll wait. I'll wait.
Hello? Mrs. Williams? May I come in?
Who is it?
Well, Mrs. Williams, I hope you'll forgive me for barging in like this, but Mr. Reedy feels it's important. I'm Lawrence Roberts.
Lawrence Roberts?
Yes. You see, I've handled most of Mr. Williams' legal business this last year. I'm one of the junior partners.
You're one of the junior partners of the law firm?
That's right. They gave me a partnership as a present for my 40th birthday. I'm the firm's foreign expert. Could we talk, Mrs. Williams, in the next room, perhaps?
Well, I suppose we could.
Good, good. I have some papers to show you.
Well, I don't really feel like talking about business now, Mr. Roberts.
Oh, of course not. I do understand. However, on the other hand, it'll help take your mind off what's happened.
Well, if you think so.
I do, definitely. Yeah, shall we sit here?
Right.
Now, here's the situation. You've just inherited a rather large business enterprise, Mrs. Williams. All over the world, there are mines, plantations, shipyards that belong to you.
There are?
There certainly are. And Mr. Reedy thought that this would be a perfect time for you to take a long
trip.
No,
I told him I won't.
But, Mrs. Williams...
I'm not going to be a middle-aged woman all alone with a lot of other middle-aged women on one of those trips. I just won't do it. If I have to be alone, I'll stay all alone right here.
But you won't be alone. The firm wants you to inspect your various holdings around the world. Naturally, we don't expect you to visit all those places by yourself. I'll be your guide.
You'll go with me?
All around the world. And you couldn't find a better guide. Why, I spend half my time traveling, and besides, well, I'm the only one the firm can spare. You see, I'm the only bachelor.
You're not married?
Nope, never took the plunge. Too busy traveling, I suppose. Now, this is my plan. First, we go to Rio de Janeiro. We'll get there just at carnival time.
Carnival time in Rio. Masks and costumes, dancing, music.
And a lot more.
Oh.
You haven't lived until you've been through carnival time in Rio. Well, from Rio, we'll make a trip by boat up the Amazon.
Wonderful.
And then on to the Orient. We'll stop off in Tahiti.
Tahiti, of course.
And then fly on to Bali Bali. We'll stay long enough to see the exotic native dances.
And then?
Then, oh, there are dozens more places for us to see. The ruined cities of old Cambodia, picturesque Hong Kong, a trip up Mount Fujiyama. I'll make sure you see everything, Mrs. Williams.
Oh, you make it sound so exciting. Rio, Tahiti, Bali Bali, Cambodia, Hong Kong, Mount Fujiyama.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Mrs. Williams, but...
Yes?
Well, seems to be a phone ringing in the other room.
Oh. Oh, yes, there is.
most unusual sort of ring. Can't be an ordinary phone. Sounds more like a small fire alarm.
Yes, it's very loud.
Yeah. Want me to answer it for you?
Oh, no, it's probably just a wrong number. Let's just go downstairs where it won't bother us, and you can finish telling me all about our lovely trip.
Fine, fine. Well, first we have to get you a passport, and then your shots.
Oh, well, you'll have to go with me, but I'll be brave.
And I suppose you'll have to get some clothes.
Yes. What colors do you like, Mr. Roberts?
Call me Larry, won't you, Mrs. Williams?
Presented A Very Private Phone Call, written by Robert Arthur and directed by Harry Nelson. In the cast, Joyce Gordon, Ben Yaffe, Gertrude Warner, Hal Burdick, and Ralph Camargo. Audio engineer Marty Folia. Sound technician Ed Blaney. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Alexander Vlastotsenko. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Edward A. Byron. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
This has been Yesterday Once More. Today we heard Theater 5. I'm Rob Hanstick, inviting you to join us again soon for another edition of Yesterday Once More. Until then, so long for now.
Well done, Rob. Good way to get us going. And going is what we're going to be doing. I hope you'll have a good start to this year, and that means you'll come back next week. Next week, we might even hear from Michael. There's a surprise. Until then, on behalf of him, whom is boss, from Rob and myself, we wish you a good week ahead, a good start on the new year, and we wish you to come back next week for another one of Michael's Saturday Surprises.